This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. If you're anything like us, you don't just book trips, you run the numbers first. Is this flight actually a deal? Is that premium card pulling its weight? Should I use points here or save them for something better? Well, that's exactly what Smart Travel dives into. They break down which travel cards actually earn their keep and which ones just look impressive in your wallet. They'll walk you through the quick math for knowing when to pay with points versus cash, and they explain how to get real value from your rewards instead of settling for that tiny reward button at checkout. It's thoughtful, research-backed travel finance delivered in a way that feels approachable and actually useful the next time you're about to hit purchase. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. For years, the Amex Platinum has been the card that defined premium travel. The airport lounge pass, the status symbol, the card you pulled out to feel like you'd made it. But what if it's not really a travel card anymore? What if it's become something entirely different? More like a membership club with perks that have less to do with flights and more to do with lifestyle. Well, today, I'm joined by Nick Cerotti, co-founder of Thrifty Traveler, to break down how Amex has completely reshaped the Platinum card. From its $8.95 annual fee and laundry list of lifestyle credits to the psychology behind why people still want it. Now, this isn't a full breakdown and review of all of the changes with the refresh. We'll talk about who the Platinum is really for, how banks are shifting towards membership models, and whether cards like the Sapphire Reserve, City Strata Elite, and Venture X can still hold their own for travelers who actually care about value. If you've ever wondered whether you're paying for points or just paying for prestige, this is the conversation that you'll want to hear.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I'm your host, DeAndre Koch. Today, we have a fantastic guest lined up for all of you all, and I'm excited for this topic that we're going to get into. But before we introduce him, I want to give a quick reminder that you can catch all these episodes in their entirety on YouTube, as well as the fact that for those that listen, or that I should say that watch our episodes on YouTube, don't forget every Friday, we release our quick hits. That's our up-to-date points and miles and travel news. And a lot of that news I get from our speaker today, which is Nick Cerotti, co-founder of Thrifty Traveler. And I'm really excited because you guys have heard me mention Thrifty Traveler a million times on the show. We've put out a lot of their deals or talk about their daily deals that they provide. I'm a subscriber to that. So I get an inbox full of deals, whether cash or points and miles based all over the world, literally every single day. And they put out a lot of great content out there. And I thought it'd be fantastic to have them on the show for more of elevated conversation around points and miles. And we always have fantastic guests, guests who talk through their stories, their travels, destinations. I share my personal stories, but we're going to have a really in-depth conversation today with Nick. So Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, DeAndre. I'm looking forward to chatting about all the crazy changes in the premium card landscape today. So looking forward to it.
Absolutely, Nick. I am as well. Before we jump into talking through this wild 2025 that we've experienced when it comes to points and miles and car changes, can you tell us a little bit about yourself as far as where do you live and how did you get into the points and miles world and through that getting into starting Thrifty Traveler?
Yeah. So I am located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I actually grew up in Fargo, North Dakota, which is really where Thrifty Traveler got its start. Jared Kamrowski, our founder, and I went to college together at the University of North Dakota. And, you know, right after we graduated, we were living together at the time. And both of us were traveling quite a bit for work, you know, staying in a lot of hotels, flying on the company's dime. But at the time, you know, really getting familiar and acquainted with all these loyalty programs. And it was right around that time that I think the Chase Sapphire Preferred originally launched. This is 2010, 2011. So that was really my first travel card. Opened the card, got the bonus, and it kind of opened my eyes in terms of what is possible with points and miles. So that is, you know, really how we got our start is we started doing this and, you know, friends and family started asking both of us, like, how are you guys traveling like this, you know, right out of college and doing this? And I think at the time, you know, points and miles was still kind of in the weird corners of the internet. It wasn't on, you know, Instagram and TikTok and all the places that it is now. And, you know, I think it's become a little bit more mainstream. But Jared's wife, Erica, I think this is around 2015. You know, she was like, you need to start a website. So we were answering a lot of questions and trying to help people kind of on a one-off basis. And so 2015, I think it was early April that Jared launched the website. I was involved a little bit on the back end. And then I started writing for the website in early 2016. By 2017, we had launched our Thrifty Traveler premium service. And Jared was able to leave his job with the federal government and run the website full-time. And then I was able to leave my job and to come on full-time early 2018. So we haven't looked back since, and it's been a fun, wild ride.
Awesome. So we started with having some experience ourselves, and then it's really cool that this kind of connection just came from a college, a rooming together, and expanded to create essentially an entire business at this point, which is really exciting. So I love having a little bit of the background and the depth. So you've been in the points and miles world for a long time, especially if we really go back to the fact that you started when the Chase Sapphire Preferred came out. I started in about 2016 when the Chase Sapphire Reserve first came out. So about a decade of experience, but I mean, you've seen a lot of things over the years and have really seen a lot of the shifts and changes in the loyalty program, which is exciting, but also calls to the breadth of knowledge that you have. So that leads me to the topic of conversation that I wanted to have today, which was regarding a recent blog post that you wrote that I really wanted to unpack today from a conversational standpoint. And it was around the notion, or the title of it is, the Amex Platinum isn't a travel card anymore. It's a club membership. And I saw that and I was like, wow, that's a really unique take, but not inaccurate. So I'd love to start by asking you essentially, Nick, why do you think the Amex Platinum has stopped being a travel card, which is really kind of what it was initially?
Yeah. So I think it's a really interesting analysis of kind of how Amex has shifted their entire business model. I first actually had this thought. I was listening to an episode of the Acquired podcast, which is one of my favorite podcasts. It was all about Costco and how Costco has kind of come to be what everybody knows Costco is today. And one of the things that stuck with me on that podcast and that discussion was that Costco's membership cards, so the actual membership that you have to get in the doors at Costco, accounts for like more than 80% of their revenue. So like actually selling goods in Costco's store is not really what their business model is about. And I started to think about that. And this was, you know, I listened to this episode right around the time that Amex had rolled out their recent wave of changes. And I started looking at all the things that they're adding. And, you know, it's been called the metal coupon book for a number of years now. But I started looking at it and just be like, you know, we are leaving the realm of travel card and more of like a membership club. And I think, you know, just the way that people that hold the Amex Platinum card feel about it. And what I mean by that is, you know, I have friends that they have the Amex Platinum card and they're very proud to take it out of their wallet, let people know that they're a platinum card holder. And they'll use it at places that, you know, they shouldn't be using it. Like I'll see them pay for dining or something. And I want to tell them, like, you know, you're only getting 1X on that transaction. That's probably not the best card to use. I feel like it's just become more about the fact that they are in the Amex Platinum ecosystem and they are a member of the card. And I would just, you know, say I first got the Amex Platinum card back in 2014 or 2015. Maybe it was before that. But I think when I first opened the card, you know, this was prior to the Chase Sapphire Reserve. This was prior to the Capital One Venture X. This was prior to really any competition in the premium travel credit card space. And so, you know, at the time, I think the annual fee was $450 and it was 100% about travel. Everything on that card was travel focused. You know, they updated the card, I think in 2017, increased the annual fee up to $550 and added a few non-travel benefits. So this was kind of where we first started seeing Amex starting to make this shift. I think they added the Saks Fifth Avenue credit at this time. And then about 4 years later in 2021, they jumped the annual fee up to $695. Added a bunch more stuff, not really related to travel, other than I think the Clear credit was one of the additions they made at that time. And then this latest round of updates was a lot of stuff that, again, not really related to travel. So it's been a really interesting card to follow and just kind of see how Amex is viewing their own business. We tune into Amex's earnings calls pretty much every quarter just to listen to what they have to say, because it's a lot of discussion about kind of the business of their card products. And it's a lot of overlap with what we cover at Thrifty Traveler. And it's just been kind of an interesting trend or journey to follow is in terms of who they're marketing for this card now and how it's kind of positioned in the market.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Because when I think back to my early days as a financial advisor and building the practice, there was a lot of pride and prestige in slapping down this heavy metal card. And I know you said that you still have friends that they're really proud to be in the Amex Platinum Club. And I get that. I feel like it's a lot less, the prestige has kind of watered down a little bit over the years versus years ago, even before I even had one. You know, if you were at a restaurant, some of the guy, you know, I got it. And there's a little bit of a showmanship with the fact that they're using the Amex Platinum card, which I think is still to this day, kind of at the level of, oh, I have a black card, that still has that level of prestige. But back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the platinum card had almost the same level of appeal or prestige as the black card did. Obviously not on the same level, but still, you know, you didn't really see it as often. And I do know that also people did have a few things they liked about it outside of the travel benefits, like their concierge, which I never hear anyone talk about, but I have many advisor friends that they would use the Amex Platinum concierge to, you know, buy flowers for their girlfriend or spouse or make reservations for travel or whatever it may be. A lot of these things back in the day, and it's really shifted at this stage. And as you said, with the recent changes, it's been a lot less about travel, although they've still kept some travel elements like increasing the Fine Hotels and Resorts credits and those type of things. They've added a lot of things that have really nothing to do with travel. So I guess, you know, when you think of it as a membership club, what type are you alluding to? Because I mean, there is the Costco's, the Sam's, the BJ's of the world, but then we do have also the country clubs of the world as well. So where do you think it kind of fits in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a little bit of both, really. You know, people that have the Amex Platinum card or have had it for a long time, like myself, I think, you know, I was willing to tolerate them because of the travel benefits that it provided. You know, I want that lounge access. I live in, you know, Minneapolis is a huge Delta hub. So having Sky Club access is quite nice, even though they did cut that back a little bit recently with only allowing 10 visits per year. But I think, you know, putting up with those credits to get those travel benefits was something I was willing to do. So in that term, you know, I feel like it was definitely kind of a membership club. But now, you know, with the annual fee at $895, you know, even with the benefits, that number to a lot of people is just crazy. And so I think they're, you know, Amex has always been kind of targeting affluent cardholders, and that's really not shifted. But with the new annual fee, I think we're kind of getting into that, like, oh, he or she is an Amex Platinum cardholder. It's starting to kind of feel like that country club prestige, especially people that know what the annual fee on that card is.
So when people are getting the card now, well, actually, before I go there, do you think Amex is still trying to attract travelers or more so status seekers, or is it a mixture of both?
Yeah, I think both. I think, you know, the roots of that card are a travel card, but I also think, you know, just where a lot of travel is going and where it's focused right now is targeting those premium travelers. So I think by adding a lot of these benefits that don't necessarily provide travel benefits, there's still appealing to travelers, but I think they're also appealing to a wider base of people that, you know, might be interested in that Lululemon credit or the Aura Ring credit or whatever it is. You know, I think in some regard, people are looking at this card as more of a status symbol than probably it was in the past. Though I do think it was a status symbol in the past. It was much more a travel status symbol. And now I think it's just more of a socioeconomic status symbol, really.
Now, of course, those of us in the points and miles world, Nick, we're kind of insane, right? So we did have all the cards, like an insane number of cards that most people think that we're probably, you know, sacrificing our mortgages for at this stage, right? But we have all these cards. These cards have, you know, fees on them, but we get benefits. And now, of course, we try to make sure we're maximizing the value of these benefits. But when we take into consideration some of these things, as an example, the Resi credits or the Lululemon credits, right? When I think about the recent, when the changes happened at the very, very end, so September of this past quarter, you know, I made sure to jump in and can I get my Lulu credit in time? Can I get my Resi credit in time? I remember putting in our WhatsApp community chat a photo of my wife and I. We were sitting at Mermaid Winery here in Virginia Beach, which is a Resi restaurant. I was like, hey, tonight's date night, courtesy of Amex. And then luckily, Lululemon is literally right next to my office. And so it's super convenient to just walk in there and just be like, oh, I want this. And it's, you know, close to free or very less expensive than Lululemon already is. Now, my point to saying all this is now for those of us in the points and miles world, we are going to try to maximize efficiency on every point as well as every dollar we're spending as a credit card fee. But how much do you think the average user of a card or consumer is weighing these things and trying to get the same amount of efficiency? And are these higher fees but better benefits or more benefits attracting or detracting people, are you thinking?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think at the end of the day, Amex can offer a lot of the stuff that they do on this card for two reasons. One, they obviously have the data, but I think the vast majority of people using these cards just don't fully know how they work and how they can get the value out of the credits. And so that's how the math works with the annual fee. They market, you know, the new Platinum card has over $3,500 in value. You know, even me, somebody that's hyper-focused on making sure I maximize this, and you as well, DeAndre, we're probably not getting that full $3,500 in value just because there's some stuff I'm going to let slip, like the Equinox gym credit. I don't live anywhere near an Equinox. You know, that's not something I'm going to use, but I can get enough value out of it elsewhere that it's worth it. And I think the second reason that this works and that Amex can do this is that a lot of these benefits, in fact, I would say that most of them are not actually paid for by Amex. And so I listened to Amex's CFO. I can't remember his name now at the top of my head here, but he was speaking at the Barclays Financial Conference a couple months ago. I think this was briefly right before the refresh, the Amex Platinum refresh rolled out. But he was saying that a lot of these merchant credits, so talking, you know, Lululemon, Aura, Saks Fifth Avenue, is that they are not even, Amex doesn't pay for these at all. And the reason that these companies are partnering with Amex to offer them on their cards is because they want access to Amex's cardholder base. It's a very profitable segment. And so Amex can, you know, increase the annual fee on these cards without really investing any more money into them. So, I mean, it's a pretty amazing business model if you can get that. But I think that's why it works. You know, Amex, how high is the ceiling? Is Amex going to go to a $1,000 annual fee? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. But at the same time, the more stuff that they add, the more convoluted and complicated these cards get. And I think, you know, Amex loves breakage, right? When people don't use the benefits, that's just more money back in their pocket.
So that's really interesting that you explain that, because I would not have assumed that that's how it worked. I'm curious, and you might not have the answer to this, Nick, but if you do, I'd be fascinated. So as an example, Saks Fifth Avenue, $50 credit. So they're not necessarily, you know, or Amex isn't paying Saks to have them in the program. You know, Saks is coming to them theoretically by what you're saying. So I go to Saks, I go ahead and I buy something for $100. I get the $50 credit. Is that being paid? Did Saks pay Amex to then reduce my credit, or is Amex still technically paying that $50? Do you know how that works? Where does the money for the credit actually come from, by chance?
You know, I don't know mechanically how that works, but yeah, I didn't necessarily know that until I heard Amex's CFO talking about this at the Barclays conference. But he didn't necessarily mention the specific merchants, which ones are being fully funded and which ones are being partially funded. But I have to imagine that there's some, you know, Amex may send them the bill at the end of the year or something of like, this is how many credits were redeemed, and they're going to pay that. I don't know exactly how it works, like I said, but what I do know is that Amex really isn't having to pay to add those benefits to their cards.
And I completely get that, because it's, of course, they're not going to completely give away all the secrets of how they're doing everything. It just was really interesting to think about, but it does make sense also, because probably the majority of consumers who are getting this card and are not in the points and miles space, and they're just getting this card because of the prestige, they've heard good things about it, et cetera, et cetera. If they're going to use their Lulu credit or their Saks credit or whatever it may be, they're probably not trying to perfectly line up a $50 rebate or a $75 rebate. They're going and they're going to go to Lulu and buy $200 and feel like they got a huge win because it only cost them $125. Lulu's still, you know, they're making their money on their end as well. So I do see where that makes sense. So let me ask you this. Do you think, Nick, that people are still chasing value or more buying into the prestige at this point with cards like this?
Yeah, I think there's really like two segments of people, right? I think the points and miles obsessed people that, you know, understand the value that the points that this card can earn, you know, they're really trying to maximize the value of it. And to your point, you know, Saks Fifth Avenue, finding something there to buy for $50 is not necessarily the easiest thing. And so, you know, a lot of people look at it like, oh, it's a $50 coupon, or Lululemon, same thing with the $75 credit. So I think, you know, you have people that are status seeking to hold the card for sure. And then I think you have, you know, the points and miles people that are looking at this and saying like, all right, what can I buy at Lululemon that's going to be the least amount of money out of my pocket? Is there something that's like $78? So I'm paying $3 or something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, you really have a few different pockets of people, really the points and miles people that, you know, are willing to put in the work to make the annual fee number work. And then the people that are just holding the card because it is they're part of a club. They're part of something that has some prestige, and, you know, it's not necessarily all that big of a deal if they let some of these credits drop. I know a lot of people in my life that hold this card and have no idea how the benefits work. And, you know, they're just finding out about the larger annual fee, and they don't know anything about what's going on. I mean, to me, I'm just, you know, kind of scratching my head, like, how can you hold a card that even, you know, even before the new annual fee of $8.95, you know, you're paying $6.95 and you don't even know really what it does for you. So I think there's a large segment of people that probably don't even really know why they hold the Platinum card.
Hey, everyone, quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode. So I want to pivot away from Amex, but before we do that, when you think through the business card and the personal card, and okay, we're paying these fees, and yes, it's possible to extrapolate value, and yes, Amex can also just keep throwing cards at us with the no lifetime language, which is very hard to decline when they're like, oh, just spend this and 200,000 more Amex points. Like, it's a draw in for sure. And again, we're in a different realm. We're a little crazy about it, but we make it work. Do you think for someone that may not be as ingrained with points and miles as we are, and the systematic, like getting new cards, getting business cards, getting the no lifetime language, and just stacking card upon card upon card, which is I'd say easier way, of course, to rack up Amex points, but someone really early, this is their first points and miles podcast ever they're listening to, which I apologize if it is, because I know this is a lot deeper than a beginner level kind of conversation, but bear with me here. My point is to kind of all of that and saying all that is, do you think that someone should be looking at backing away or backing down from these ultra premium cards, especially like the Amex Platinum, the Business Platinum, and looking more at the gold or the green or the blue? Should we be looking elsewhere while there is this membership club like we've talked about? Should we or should some people start looking elsewhere at this stage?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty firm believer that, you know, the Amex Platinum, even the Chase Sapphire Reserve, and, you know, to some extent, Citi's new Strata Elite card, you know, these are cards that are meant for people that really, you know what they're doing. When I say know what they're doing, I'm talking about, you know, maximizing the credits and using the points. And I say that because, you know, you can still get a very solid welcome offer on the Amex Gold or even the Chase Sapphire Preferred. Those cards have way smaller annual fees. They're much easier to kind of wrap your arms around how to get value out of them. So I think if people are, you know, just starting out, I do not think that the Platinum, especially today, is a starter card. I think, you know, like I said at the top of the show here, the Sapphire Preferred is a great entry point. There's, you know, maybe that $150 hotel credit that you need to make sure you use. But other than that, it's really just about, you know, earning more on dining and travel and then redeeming points. I think really interestingly, I've been covering the card space for a long time, and Amex's recent refresh of the Platinum card, I can't think of another time where the refresh has been like almost nothing about the welcome offer, right? They advertise the as high as 175,000 points, but that's been around for quite a while now. And so, you know, really what Amex was offering was nothing to do with the better welcome offer. It was all the other stuff that comes with the card. And so in some degree, I feel like the Platinum card is becoming less about the points that it earns, which you and I both know it's, you know, that's a really important part of the card, and membership rewards points are extremely valuable. But Amex is selling all the other stuff on the card, and it's becoming less about, you know, the points that it earns. And I think that's also a big reason why Amex didn't change any of the earning rates on the Platinum card. You know, as you're well aware, the Platinum card earns 5x on airlines and hotels booked directly with Amex Travel. But then outside of that, it's 1x everywhere. So it's just really not a good everyday spending card. And there's a lot better options. But I think Amex is making a bet also with all these new credits and benefits that it's going to keep that card top of wallet for people that, you know, don't really know how to play this game. And by keeping it top of wallet, they're going to keep spending on the Platinum card. And that's exactly what they want. But, you know, that's a long-winded way of saying there are much better cards for people that are not going to be deep into this and don't want to hold 4, 5, 6 or more credit cards. I just don't think the Platinum card's a great option for that crowd.
No, that makes perfect sense. And one of the things that you mentioned made me think that I didn't really think through the fact that, yes, they didn't really change the welcome offer on the personal card, or really, I mean, even the business card, there's some adjustments. One thing I will mention that I do think was fantastic from an earning option standpoint is the business card hitting that 2x multiplier instead of 1.5x on the 5k spend. And while that likely doesn't affect a lot of people, even most of the business card users, because most people aren't just dropping, you know, 5-10k that often on their business Platinum card relative to their normal everyday spend, I will say where that has come in handy, and I know that our community, our listeners have been super excited about, is all the things we talk about for our business owners on how they can use their credit cards for payroll on a platform called Zillow Money. And what's great about that is if you have a business, probably your payroll is going to be north of 5K. We have some people in our chat that talk about their 50K payroll per cycle or more. And so to be able to get 2X on that 50K, even though they have a 3% fee, that helps to eat up a lot of that and can be huge for spend. So I do think that was probably one of the most exciting changes outside of also getting the extra credits for fine hotels and resorts that were really nice. So there were some great things, but again, I think overarching, I would agree with you that this card is not for everybody unless you really, really know how to maximize the value out of it. And then perhaps it may make sense to even still have an exit strategy after you do that, if you would agree.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That's a great call out on the multiplier on the Business Platinum card. And then also, you know, like you said, the fine hotels and resorts credit. I've been a longtime Business Platinum card holder, and that's always kind of driven me nuts that they didn't get anything on the hotel side. So I was glad to see them make that shift there as well. But yeah, I would totally agree. This card is really about, you know, if you're going to get it, you got to have a plan to use it and make sure you know what you're doing with it.
I will say, you know, even though I've been in this game for a while, right, we all still make mistakes. The most annoying one that I've probably made once every other year is that I will be thinking that, oh man, I got to use my business card, Fine Hotels and Resort benefit before, you know, the semi-monthly ends or before the year ends or whatever it may be. And I'll go, I'll book something, I'll charge it, you know, December, like kind of frantically, not even thinking. And then 3 weeks will go by, I'm like, man, how come I haven't gotten my credit yet on this business platinum card? And then I was like, oh my gosh, why did I use my business platinum card? I didn't even need to do this. So yes, I'm also glad for the single fact that every other year I just happened to forget that the business platinum didn't get it. And now it makes my life much simpler. So for the listeners out there, again, I mentioned this before, I still make mistakes when it comes to points and miles. We all make mistakes. It's not perfect. There's a reason why it's a game and a strategy and all the things. But yes, so Nick, I want to transition a little bit because you've already covered a little bit about this, but I just want to highlight in broad form again, do you feel like the Sapphire Reserve and the Strata Elite are basically kind of in the same boat from being more of a membership, more of a club versus travel cards? Or would you say one of them, maybe the Sapphire or maybe the Strata Elite, is still a traveler's card? What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think there's no question that Citi and Chase are looking at what Amex is doing and trying to kind of mirror the success that they're having with that card. I will say that Amex has done a phenomenal job of conditioning their cardholders for these changes over the course of quite a while. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, they really started kind of introducing these credits on the card back in 2017. They added more in 2021, and now here we are in 2025, and there's quite a few credits on the card, but it didn't happen overnight. And so people that have the card have been, you know, really for the better part of a decade, have been conditioned to that this is what you have to do if you want to hold these cards. And so I think from my perspective, Chase went a little too far all in on the Sapphire Reserve changes in terms of, you know, the card previously had a $550 annual fee. It offers probably one of the best benefits of any travel card with the $300 travel credit, incredibly easy to use. But now they've got lounges and they're really just kind of copying what Amex is doing, and to a lesser extent, you know, it's the credits that it's offering, I just don't think are as good. But Chase tried to go all in on this with like one round of updates. And I think, you know, from what I've been seeing on Reddit and just listening to our readers, it's not being met with the same fanfare that the Amex Platinum changes are. And then I would say Citi is definitely trying to head this direction. I think the Strata Elite is actually a pretty good product. I was a little unsure about it. I opened the card probably 3 to 4 weeks ago now, and I've been pleasantly surprised. I think it's got some good stuff on it, and I think it's, you know, it's much easier to use than the Platinum. Of course, it comes at a lower annual fee, but I think the Amex Platinum really stands in a league of its own of, like, you know, prestige of the travel card. And Chase and Citi are trying to get there, but I think they're just a long ways behind.
Yeah, I would say in the kind of head-to-head, you know, heavyweight battle this year, Amex absolutely KO'd Chase with their changes. And I know I remember when the Reserve came out, because I had not had the Platinum yet, the Reserve came out, I was looking at the Platinum, and basically Amex had to step up their game because of how great the Reserve was. And, you know, the Reserve's been kind of the no-brainer best travel card out there. But like you said, things have changed and Amex really won out this year. I'm curious, I know this wasn't kind of part of our discussion that we're planning on, but I wanted to ask you about the Strata Elite, since you mentioned that it's been pleasantly surprising to use. Can you point out just a couple of the things that you're really loving about it that maybe you weren't expecting to, or just that's just been great in general over the last 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks that you had the card?
Yeah. So I think, you know, first and foremost, the current offer is what tipped the scale for me of the 100K. And after you spend 6K in 3 months, the fact that, you know, Citi has now become the exclusive issuer of American Airlines credit cards has allowed them to add AA as a transfer partner. AA miles are super valuable, so it's just another great way to earn them. But since I got the card, it offers this $200 annual splurge credit, is what they call it, where you can use it at American Airlines. You can use it at Best Buy. Citi has the co-branded credit card relationship with Best Buy, so it kind of makes sense from that perspective. But yeah, I needed a new pair of AirPods. My old AirPods kind of bugged out, and the ones in my ear right now, I bought at Best Buy with that credit. And so, you know, the credit hit in a couple days. It was very seamless. And, you know, just that alone, you know, I'm somebody that's not going to have a problem spending $200 annually at Best Buy. I don't know how long I'll keep the Strata Elite past my first year. But I also think that the 6X, the Citi Nights, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but essentially from like 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. on Friday and Saturday nights. Every week, dining goes from 3x to 6x, which I've never seen a credit card benefit like that before. So a few different times, as I've been working on, you know, wiping out the welcome bonus spending requirements, I've just been using my card, you know, on Friday and Saturday nights, and it's like, oh, I got 6x on that purchase. So I think it's unique. It's a little bit complicated, but even outside of that window, 3x at dining is solid. And again, you know, Amex can't compete with that on the Platinum card. If you want it 4x, I should say, on dining with Amex, you got to hold the gold, which is another, you know, $325 a year. So I think that's where Citi and Chase are really going to put some pressure on the premium card space is with the spend categories, because Amex is just, it's just not there.
Well, Nick, there's one card that you haven't mentioned in the grouping with all of these other cards, and I'm assuming it's because you feel differently, perhaps in a good way, about where this card is and or where it's going. And that obviously is the Capital One Venture X card, which is Capital One's at this stage most premium card. They also have the business version. So I'm curious, what's your thoughts on where that card is? And is it shining a little bit brighter now versus the Amex, the Chase, the Citi's elite cards?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love the Capital One Venture card. I think, you know, when Capital One first rolled this card out back in, I think it was the fall of 2021, we got, Thrifty Traveler got invited to a press event, and we got to sit down with their managing vice president that oversaw the venture products at that time for an interview, which was really awesome. And she basically said, you know, there's, paraphrasing what she said, but she said there's a gap in the market. There's a ton of these $95 fee cards. And at the time, the Amex Platinum was $695, and there really wasn't a whole lot in between. And so that was the space that Capital One was really going after. And, you know, she made a comment about, like, I don't have time to track a laundry list of credits, and I know a lot of our cardholders don't either, and there's not an appetite for that. And so Capital One was really trying to slot in and fill that void, and I think they've done an amazing job of that. The question becomes now, you know, with Amex with an $895 annual fee, Chase with a $795 annual fee, and Citi with, you know, $595, and adding all these kind of use it or lose it type credits, can the Venture X stay at $395? Are they going to, you know, forego this kind of credit heavy model that Amex has pioneered? And I think, you know, when I think about the Venture X card, it's like they have to increase the annual fee. It just seems like silly not to at this point. They could increase the annual fee on that card by $100, and they're still the cheapest premium travel card by a long shot. But I think as it stands today, the Venture X is really, in my opinion, kind of the last true like premium travel card that's solely about travel. There's really two things that you need to do to make that card worth it, and that's use the $300 annual credit for booking travel through their portal. And then if you renew your annual fee, you get that 10,000 Capital One Mile anniversary bonus. So at the bare minimum, those are worth a cent a piece. So you're looking at $100. So if you can use that $300 credit and the anniversary bonus, you know, that's $400 right there for a card that's costing $395. I think for most travelers, even if you travel just a couple times a year, it's kind of a no-brainer. The question is Capital One going to be able to sustain that, especially with annual fees going where they are on their biggest competitors?
No, that makes perfect sense. And I love the way you broke that down, because it is now kind of moved to be a little bit more of the no-brainer, and also just really, really easy card for someone to get behind or to tell their P2 to their player two to get for points and miles, because it's just, hey, this is 2x on everything. Just use this for everything and we'll be fine. Now, obviously, if you want to refine, get 4x on dining, 3x here, et cetera, et cetera. You can get more nuance, but it's a really great start for someone, or a really great foundation for someone, I should say. And of course, as you said, probably the last true travel ultra premium card. I don't know if it's technically ultra premium, but premium travel card. So Nick, as we start to wrap up here a little bit, in general, when someone's looking at all of these cards and they're getting feedback through all the people they follow with points and miles and podcasts and blogs and all the everything, in general, for someone, not just in points and miles, but travel in general, how can they stay smart about figuring out what's worth paying for and what's actually just really great marketing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think a lot of this is just going to boil down to, like, you really need to understand your own travel habits and the things that are personally valuable to you. And I say that because, you know, I live in a Delta hub. So like the city transfer to AA probably doesn't move the needle for a lot of people that are in my life. So, you know, earning a ton of city points is probably not something that they're super interested in. On the flip side of that, you know, having an Amex card that you can transfer to Sky Miles, even though it's not always the best deal to do that, that's probably more valuable for a lot of people that live in a Delta hub or fly Delta often. So I think when you're looking at a lot of these cards, you really just have to just understand what's valuable to you. Are you somebody that wants to play the game of maximizing every dollar you spend and making sure that you have a solid dining card or a solid, you know, card that's going to earn 3x on travel or whatever it is? Or are you somebody that just wants a good travel card that's going to have lounge access and some good premium travel protections and earn 2x everywhere and not really worry about having to play the maximization game? You know, the Venture X is a great option. My wife, my P2, she's been doing this for a long time alongside me, and she hates the having to use all the different cards at different places. So I've kind of just made the decision of she's an authorized user on the Venture X card and she uses it everywhere. And I know I'm getting at least 2x on pretty much everything she's going to spend on. And I think things like that, that probably aren't going to be in the blogosphere or on podcasts when people are talking about, you know, using these cards and using these points, you really just need to weigh what's important to you. And the answer is going to be different for everybody.
Perfect. Well said. Love the explanation there. Nick, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. As I mentioned at the beginning, I talk about Thrifty Traveler pretty much all the time. And so I will make a plug because it's linked in the show notes every single episode that we do for your premium, Thrifty Traveler Premium, which you do have the free version as well, which we'll find or we'll send your email, I should say, points, deals, and cash deals every single day. But the premium version, which we keep our affiliate link for in all the show notes, does give you a wave more of info, as well as the unicorn fares that you guys will literally text about. So I'm actually curious, since I have you, like, who's searching for this and then sending the text out? Is there a team there? Is it like, how do you guys find, because the unicorn fares, for those that don't know, it's literally a text message that says, hey, this either mistake fare or just almost typically impossible, like think Etihad the Residence or whatever it may be, is available on these dates, basically Hunger Games style, go for it. So I'm really curious, since I have you on the show, how do you guys find these type of things?
Yeah, we find them in lots of different ways. We have a team of people that are literally searching for both cash and award deals like all day. And that's what they do. And it's really fun when we're in the office, when we're in the Thrifty Traveler office and we find one of these things. And, you know, our team of people here are obsessed travelers, just like probably everybody listening to the show. And it gets a little wild and it's fun. And we're trying to book it ourselves while we're trying to get the deal together to send out. And, you know, the text messaging thing is something we've added in the last couple of years. And I think a lot of people love that because it kind of gives them a warning of like, hey, this is coming very shortly. I need to be ready to book something. But yeah, we have people that are just really know these award programs in and out that are looking for them, you know, day in and day out. And we always tell people, like, you know, you can absolutely find, you know, points and miles of availability on your own, but I'm quite confident that nobody is covering the depth and breadth of searches that we are. And we try to do a lot of the heavy lifting for our members. And that's what people love about it.
Absolutely. Well, it's a fantastic service. Again, I subscribe to it. The link for it is in our show notes with the promo code. I think there's a little bit of a discount there as well. I won't quote all that for now because I don't remember what the metrics or the numbers are, but it's a fantastic service. It's very inexpensive as well. I know you guys recently added the hotel service in also. So wanted to plug all that for Thrifty Traveler. But before we wrap up, wanted to ask you if there's anything else the listener should know about that you guys do or that exists, or how they can connect and follow with you directly, if that makes sense too.
Yeah. So with all the topical to the show today, with all the changes and all these new benefits on all the premium travel cards, we just kept hearing more and more from listeners of like, this is becoming really difficult to track. Like, how do I keep track of all these benefits and make sure I'm using them? And so we have been hard at work over the last month building a tracking tool that we have. I think we're rolling out the second version of that today, which is a really in-depth spreadsheet that allows you to track pretty much all of the Travel Rewards credit cards. So you get the file, you can select which cards you have, you can even track for a P2, and it will, you know, show you when you have a credit about to expire. But it's like kind of changed my life. It's solved a pain point of mine that I've had for a lot of years of just keeping on top of all these travel credits. So I'll have DeAndre link that down in the show notes. It's a free tool. You can get it and download the tool. But yeah, in terms of where else to follow us, we're at Thrifty Traveler on Instagram. We have the Thrifty Traveler podcast, which DeAndre, I know you're familiar with, and we got that show started up in March of this year. It's been really fun. We drop episodes every Thursday morning, so check us out there and appreciate all your support, DeAndre, and thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely, Nick. It's been an absolute pleasure. And about that tool, I do want to clarify as well. It's not an app per se. So it is an offline, doesn't use your data, kind of old school, but in a good way, tool to use, correct?
That is absolutely correct. Yeah. So when you get the link, it creates a copy of a master file. So you're not going to have, you know, somebody else's information in there, and you're not putting in any sensitive information. It's just, you know, tell us what card you have. When did you open it? When is your annual fee due? And it starts to do all the math and tracking for you. And as long as you, you know, keep up with it and check off credits as you use them, it's a really good tool to just help you know if you are getting at least your annual fee investment back. So we've had a lot of really positive feedback on the tool, and we're continuing to update and make it better.
Awesome. Nick, before we wrap this up, two last questions I'd like to ask every single guest. The first, very simply, is I know you've been in the world of points and miles for a very long time. Who else or who next should we have on the show?
That's a great question. I don't know if you're familiar with Max Miles Points, but Max is on Instagram at Max Miles Points. I love his content. I think he's an amazing video creator. Max actually, way before he started his Instagram account, did a lot of freelance video and Instagram work for Thrifty Traveler before he went off on his own. So Max is a great follow. We had him on our podcast a number of months ago now, and it was a fun interview. So get Max if you can.
Awesome. We'll reach out. I do follow him on Instagram. His video editing skills are superb. So that makes a lot of sense why you would say that. Nick, any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
Thanks for having me on the show, and happy travels to everybody listening.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been an absolute blast. And for the listeners out there, if you haven't already, make sure to take advantage of Thrifty Traveler Premium, follow their blog. They have a lot of great content, their podcast as well. And if you enjoyed this episode today, you know all the things to do. Follow us on social media, sign up for our newsletter, join our WhatsApp community, which the link to that is either through our newsletter, the intro email that you get, or through our Facebook group. Tell a friend, leave a like, a rating, and subscribe on whatever platform that you find this at as well. And with that, we will wrap this one up, and we will catch you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
The New York Times named the Frommer's Travel Podcast one of the 13 best for travel. Why did they like it? Well, they said, and I quote, "With charisma and candor, Pauline Frommer discusses the charms and ongoing transformations of places near and far, whether on the islands of Hawaii or on safari in Tanzania." Pretty nice, huh? We post new podcasts weekly, talking about travel from every angle. I hope you'll tune in.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at VoiceScape.com.